Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 25th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 56 of Who's Reading the Organon. We're moving on to aphorism number 22 today. It is quite long, plus the footnote. As we're waiting for Vera to get on, I will start with our inspirational quote, and my favorite is from Twitter. You know that I really love to look on the positive sides of things, and there is a person named Greetums that says, "Laughter is our weapon of mass construction." I really like that because it's building things up instead of deconstructing and taking things down, and laughter really can lighten a serious situation. And also from Phenomenal Life, who says with a hashtag for success, from George Bernard Shaw, progress is possible without change. And those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. And that's what we're trying to do. At least I'm trying to do it for myself, is change my mind and rewire it and figure out ways that I can understand the organon even better and understand what it is for dynamism, for energy, and to understand that disorder and derangement comes from a non-material source. And as I think about that quote, I'm also thinking how when we talk about cure, it's not actually, to me, in my mind, a permanent cure, because we are still apt to be ill from time to time, and it is based on the fact that we're looking at that change in dynamism, that an energy of what has changed in the individual, for us to progress, to evolve to a better place. And one more little quote is from Albert Einstein. "The opinion prevailed among advanced minds that it was time that belief should be replaced increasingly by knowledge. Belief that did not itself rest on knowledge was superstition, and as such had to be opposed." And let's say greet Vera if she is with us.
Hi, Debbie. Vera, hi, everyone. Yeah.
Hi. Are you great? Up for a good show today, huh?
Okay.
I think I had a little bit too much coffee. I also would like to bring people's attention to a few things on the Homeopathy World Community Network. One is that there is a new profile question. All the people who are signing on brand new will automatically get it, and it is an agreement form to agree to the guidelines and disclaimer when you get onto the network. For those people who are already members, click your settings button on your page and then click the agree button there on your profile. There are two great discussions going on. One is by Dr. Mohammed Rafiq, Understanding the Rubric. Let me give you the correct attribution here. It's Dr. Prasad Arvind Rasal, who has written Understanding the Rubric with a Case, and I didn't realize he has written so many fantastic discussions. Please take a look at his work. And then Dr. Mohammed Rafiq has written The Patient Feels Better, But, and that's a question mark, because he shows us that sometimes pain is a discomfort for the patient and the caregiver, but the moment pain disappears, the patient and his bystanders feel better. And also the doctors feel better. However, there are certain situations where the pain disappears, but the pathology advances. Take a look at what he's written on that account. And now I am ready to move on to the aphorisms.
Okay.
Hey, Vera.
So we're going back over aphorism 22, which we read, but we didn't really discuss. I'll read it.
Okay.
But as nothing is to be observed in diseases that must be removed in order to change them into health, besides the totality of their signs and symptoms, and likewise medicines can show nothing curative besides their tendency to produce morbid symptoms in healthy persons and to remove them in diseased persons, it follows, on the one hand, that medicines only become remedies and capable of annihilating diseases because the medicinal substance, by exciting certain effects and symptoms, that is to say, by producing a certain artificial morbid state, removes and abrogates the symptoms already present, to wit, the natural morbid state we wish to cure. On the other hand, it follows that for the totality of the symptoms of the disease to be cured, that medicine must be sought which proved to have the greatest tendency to produce similar or opposite symptoms. And the brackets here are the remedy must be sought which, according as experience shall approve, whether the morbid symptoms are most readily, certainly, and permanently removed and changed into health by similar or opposite medicinal symptoms. Okay.
Okay.
Shall we discuss the aphorism first and then read the footnote and discuss that? Or shall we read the footnote and then discuss both together?
Okay, why don't we start with the aphorism, and then if you think that it needs some clarification, we'll go down to the footnote.
Well, we'll go down to the footnote anyway, that's for sure, because it's such a big one.
Okay, it sounds like we're having a problem with our connection today. And it says at the aphorism number 22, medicines can show nothing curative besides their tendency to produce morbid symptoms in healthy persons. So it's sounding to me like we need to start with a healthy person and then to remove them in the diseased person. And so it's like if you're looking at two ends of a magnet, there's a positive and negative side. One is there's a positive, the healthy, and then you're removing them from the disease, the negative. And I'm wondering what where Vera has gone today. She may have to log off and come back on.
You can't hear me, Debbie. Can you hear me?
You're back.
Just being quiet.
Oh, you were just being quiet.
Just being quiet. You were speaking, so I was being quiet. I do it occasionally.
Oh, how nice.
People find it shocking. Okay. It's true, but I do it occasionally.
It is quite shocking. Well, I will give you the speaking, the podium. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, here again, also Hanuman is referring. Again, that we're talking about the totality of the signs and symptoms of the disease. And nothing is to be observed in diseases that must be removed except the totality of signs and symptoms. So if our person is irritable but has always been irritable his entire life and has always dealt fine with it, but now he's got a cough and a cold and he's irritable, well, we're looking at the cough and the cold to remove. The irritability, that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's just like a little harking back. But since nothing's to be observed in diseases except the totality of their signs and symptoms, and medicines can show nothing curative except their ability to produce symptoms in healthy people, that's our matchmaking. You remember we were talking about the matchmaking elements before?
Yes.
So medicines only become remedies capable of doing work if they can create effects and symptoms. So if our ordinary onion was not able to make anyone cry or you know, have stinging pain in their eye. If the ordinary onion couldn't do that, we wouldn't have our Liamsepa. It wouldn't be possible to use it as a remedy. But because the ordinary onion can change our state of health, that means that it can change our state of disease.
And it does that to the person who is perfectly healthy as well, not just the person who is not well. So we can all experience the effect of this onion. And frequently do. And frequently, if anybody has tips on how not to be crying when they're cutting them, like running them underwater or putting a mask on, I don't know. My question to you is, if this person's natural state is irritability, will they always be irritable, or is there something that can reduce that irritability? Is it only because they've got this cough and cold and now have become extremely irritable and are not coping very well with this condition that we take irritability as a symptom, or the fact that they're like not very happily to be around this person? Is there any way to target this condition?
Well, I'm not sure that it needs to be targeted through homeopathy. I think sometimes as homeopaths we forget that people have an entire life that has nothing to do with homeopathy. You know, people have lifestyle, they have career choices, they have partner choices, they have everything which could contribute or reduce the level of irritability they have in their nature. But if someone has a cough and cold and is irritable, and he's always been irritable ever since he was a few months old, I wouldn't take irritability as a symptom, because it's not new. It's not part of the current disease state.
Okay, so you don't take irritability as... as a symptom. And so this person has to deal with it. And it's almost as if every time this individual does get a respiratory illness or an upset stomach or whatever headache, they become irritable. So it's something that's always going to keep coming up for them, and it's
Debbie, you need to differentiate. You need to differentiate between if someone, whenever they get sick in any shape or form, they become extremely irritable.
Okay.
Then that's something that you can use. But if someone always was extremely irritable, always is extremely irritable, just seems to notch it up a couple of notches whenever they get sick, there I'm not sure how much we can use it.
Okay.
If it's very clear in within the sick state, for example, that the person is irritable and has company aggravates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Usually they're not wild about company, but they handle it, mm-hmm, then I probably would take company aggravates, because it's a direct manifestation of that notching up of irritability. But if someone is always generally irritable, and when they're sick they're generally irritable, then I can't really use the irritability, as there's no change from the healthy state to the sick state. Sometimes there's a tendency.
Thank you. That was good.
Good. I'm glad. Sometimes there's a tendency to approach a case as if we are there to cure everyone's personality defects. Not that irritability is a personality defect, as I'm possessed of a great degree of it myself. But sometimes we feel, you know, if they're a sad person, we have to make them into a happy person. And I don't think that's what homeopathy is about. That's what life is about. That's what their life lessons are about. In homeopathy, we look to see if they became sad when they became sick. If they were generally okay and then they became sad. If someone says, I've been sad all my life, and you ask them, well, all your life? And they say, no, I remember before I turned 5, I was happy. Okay, that's something to work with. But if someone's generally morose as a personality, as a deep-seated, deep-rooted personality trait, well, you know, it's like if someone's not a nice person, we're not going to give them a remedy that will necessarily change that, although I have heard stories.
So, very often a homeopath will ask, what was the pregnancy like? What was the birth like? And very often the mother will say they had a fright or they had a fall or something, and then something this individual is born and they have a certain type of personality. Now, they themselves may not know what had happened in the womb, but something could have happened. And this is something that very often is looked at. But the other things that you're speaking about, I feel as if it's almost karmic, that this is a life lesson, and you're saying that this individual's lesson in this life is to learn how to cope with a particular personality trait that they have. For instance, if somebody is very talented in art, it's not something that you want to, you know, if looking on the light side and the positive side, you're not going to want to change that attribute that the individual has. You might want to enhance it. And on the other side, if there's something that's a trait that's not so positive, and again, it's how do you deal with that? So very often, I don't know if you've heard this, perhaps some of you have, that somebody has a propensity to want to kill or to use a knife. And so either they can become somebody who does devious things in this world, or you can turn them into a surgeon and they do helpful things. Or
but
they
I think
a cook.
I think though also this this practical prescribing, what are the tools that we need to prescribe? And then there's the broader picture input. And I think that very often what I see happening is that in order to practically prescribe, we need to focus in, because what we're looking for is the symptoms that will guide us to the remedy. Focusing in, we look very strictly at what has changed, and it's possible even a pregnancy experience will not be part of what has changed in the baby. We're looking at the symptoms that the baby is presenting. We're looking at the symptoms the adults are presenting in exactly the way Hanuman said. We look for what has changed from the previous health state, even if it wasn't so healthy, has changed to bring them where they are now. But then what happens is that we're guided through to a small group of remedies. And very often what we'll see when we go into the Materia Medica and check out the remedies that we're guided into, and personally, I really recommend looking at proving symptoms, using that double check as an opportunity to go over the proving symptoms of the remedies that are being looked at. What we'll see is a broader picture that fits exactly the broader picture that we were given. And that's a very interesting part of the process.
Yes.
So,
it's almost
so
like
pregnancy,
an aha. Yes.
The pregnancy experience can act as a confirmatory if we see that in addition to everything else which really fits the remedy that we chose, we see this as a remedy that this is a patient that can be affected by great fright, and that's in the remedy. And then we'll say, aha, now I know I want this one. Because it fits all the presenting symptoms, it fits everything that's changed. What we focused in on brings us to the remedies that will then demonstrate the broader picture that we saw in the intake.
Wonderful clarification. I appreciate it. You're always bringing me back home to the main points and what I need to look at and how to go about taking a case, and that's why I love our talks. So should we move forward in
footnote.
Just aphorism?
Footnote.
Okay. We're ready for that.
Okay. The other possible mode of employing medicines for diseases besides these two being the similar or opposite medicinal symptoms referred to in the brackets, is the allopathic method, in which medicines are given whose symptoms have no direct pathological relation to the morbid state, neither similar nor opposite, but quite heterogeneous to the symptoms of the disease. This procedure plays, so here we're talking about if you give an allopathic medication to a healthy person, you won't get the symptoms that are trying to be cured, or you won't get the opposite of the symptoms. So let's say you won't get, how would that read? What would the example be for that?
There are, like Ritalin does affect children and adults in a different way. Mm-hmm. That kind, that's like an example of, or like coffee, well, coffee is not a, coffee medicinally in quantity is a medicine. Would you not say so? And it affects the individual in a particular way. But
it's not given as an allopathic medicine.
No.
I think they are kind of talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If you give Tylenol to a person who doesn't need it, okay. It won't cause the headache.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
It won't cause the relaxation.
Uh-huh.
I think that's right. Possibly an example. What do you think?
Well, you might get sick if you took Tylenol.
Took
you might get
doses.
An upset stomach. Yeah. So it does. Drugs do produce symptoms, but I don't know how they relate exactly.
Ah, well, you said
as a toxic effect. What?
You said now if you give Tylenol, you might get an upset stomach, but you don't take Tylenol
uh-huh.
for an upset stomach.
No.
So
we
this
don't.
Is an example of a medicine whose symptoms have no direct pathological relation to the morbid state, neither similar nor opposite, because it might cause a stomach upset that has no connection with the headache
right.
that you normally take Tylenol for. Okay,
right,
so
you're only getting kind of a side effect, which they call side effects, and I say are effects. Okay, so go ahead. Are we reading more?
This procedure plays, as I've shown elsewhere, an irresponsible, murderous game with the life of the patient by means of dangerous, violent medicines whose action is unknown and which are chosen on mere conjectures and given in large and frequent doses, again by means of painful operations intended to lead the deceased to other regions and taking the strength and vital juices of the patient through evacuations above and below, sweat or salivation, but especially through squandering the irreplaceable blood, as is done by the reigning routine practice, used blindly and relentlessly, usually with the pretext that the physician should imitate and further the sick nature in its efforts to help itself, without considering how irrational it is to imitate and further these very imperfect, mostly inappropriate efforts of the instinctive, unintelligent vital energy which is implanted in our organism, so long as it is healthy to carry on in life, in harmonious development, but not to heal itself in disease. Just a brief stop there. This is to
mm-hmm.
remind there's a certain view that the life force has super intelligence. But Hahnemann says it doesn't. Hahnemann says the life force can handle health and disease within its scope. As soon as it goes beyond its scope, it can't invent. It can't do anything more than try just to preserve basic health by externalizing symptoms. So there was at the time a strong movement within medicine which said if the body is trying to evacuate, that means evacuation is the healthiest thing for the body. That means let's get it to do more.
Right. And I have an example, if you'd like.
Hmm?
I have an example. That is the use of Ipecac, which I believe is no longer recommended by doctors to keep in your medicine chest. It used to be always there for if you had something going on, you've taken a poison and you wanted to empty the stomach, and you would give someone Ipecac to make a person vomit even more. But I've read that it is not recommended anymore because of the various effects upon the esophagus and the burning and other possibilities that could occur from taking it. Is this not correct, or is this an example that fits the case?
I think so. I think that is an example. I think also when, but these are methods, I don't know how much they're used today.
Is what?
The methods that would have people throw up more or evacuate more or... Let's stay focused. The important thing
okay.
here is looking at the way Hahnemann sees the vital force. He says the vital force can't heal itself. The vital force needs to be helped. So within the basic scope of the occasional cough and cold and short duration, that's the vital force's scope. But when the vital
okay.
force is carried beyond its scope, it might be able to heal itself, but it could take time and it could take a price. And it says, Hanuman says, for were it possessed of such a model ability to heal itself in disease, it would never have allowed the organism to get sick. When made ill by noxious agents, our life principle cannot do anything else than express its depression caused by disturbance of the regularity of its life, by symptoms, by means of which the intelligent physician is asked for aid. If this is not given, it strives to save by increasing the ailment, especially through violent evacuations, no matter what this entails, often with the largest sacrifices or destruction of life itself. For purposes of cure, the morbidly depressed vital energy possesses so little ability worthy of imitation, since all changes and symptoms produced by it in the organism are the disease itself. What intelligent physician would want to imitate it with the intention to heal if he did not thereby sacrifice his patient? One image that I've often had in my mind through this particular description that Hanuman gives, and he gives it elsewhere as well, is that the vital force is in some ways a bit like a blind man who lives in an apartment where he knows where absolutely everything is, and he has no difficulty getting around his apartment. He gets around amazingly. But if one day people invade his apartment, they break in and they move everything around, then this person who is perfectly capable within his regulated environment now no longer can find what he needs to find, and not only that, can potentially harm himself by bashing into things or falling over things. And somehow that seems to me a bit the image of the vital force here. When everything, like Hanuman says, when made ill by noxious agents, a life principle can do nothing else than express its depression caused by disturbance of the regularity of its life. In regularity of life, we're fine. When something comes in right. and knocks us over in some shape or form, and especially if it does so on a repeat basis, we're not fine. We need outside help. And I think this is perhaps one of these rules that I like, where you can apply it across the board, that very often in our lives, we do fine. We can manage fine on our own. But every now and then you come to something, you come to a place where you need other people. You cannot do it on your own. And in a way, I think that it's one of these rules that pop up every now and then.
So he's in a way saying how much we do need each other. We need a community. We need a family.
I don't think he's saying that. But you can take the concept of the vital force that manages fine within a regular situation. But when there's anything irregular, it needs help.
Well, I really like the inference, even if he hasn't stated it outright. And so I also enjoyed your little description of the blind man in the apartment. And it almost sounds as if he's saying, because the individual cannot deal with it, that it's toward pathology, because it keeps going in the direction of finding a way to cure. And we only have 1 minute left, so we're going to have to finish up and move on tomorrow. Do you want to reply to my last statement?
I think that you summed things up pretty well.
Okay, so tomorrow we will maybe go on to aphorism number 23. And if you have any thoughts about aphorism 22, we'll hear from you tomorrow. And really a very, very quick show today. Went fast.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much, Debbie.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Take your Organon off the shelf and read it. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.